Welcome to the Walking on Eggshells with Dr. Tolu podcast. This is the podcast that helps parents and especially those caring for a child with a chronic health condition to balance supporting your child's mental health with maintaining your own emotional health. Good morning, good afternoon if you're based in Nigeria. Good evening, depending on where you're joining us from. My name is Dr. Tolulope Alugo, if you haven't met me yet. I'm the founder of St. John CAP, where I try to empower youth mental health through educating the youth themselves, their parents, and also other caregivers. Over the last couple of weeks, we've kind of talked about different topics in the area of youth mental health. This month, we're discussing teen depression. Today, we have a guest with us who's area of expertise is not just only teen depression, but a very important area of that affects all areas of mental health, an area that's constantly being discussed in our consulting rooms, and that's in the area of sleep. So we have Dr. Funke Afolabi Brown. I'm going to get her to introduce herself in further detail, but just to say that if you have any questions, please type them in the comments, and we will take them towards the end of our conversation today. So Dr. Funke Afolabi Brown, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I know you're a very busy lady. Just tell us what you do, just joining to deal with sleep.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Now you are really, the work you do is just so amazing because like you said, you know, I'm a pediatric pulmonologist and a sleep medicine physician. And so what I do is I empower busy professional women and their children to prioritize sleep so they can live their fullest lives. And just like you mentioned, sleep impacts every aspect of life, mental, physical, emotional. And so just the work that you do, and I'm just so honored that we decided to do this, and I'm really excited.
Thank you very much. I mean, you said you do pediatric pulmonology and also sleep medicine. So that's two very busy areas. And like I said, sleep is a problem when it comes to dealing with teens with mental health. But also pulmonology, also a lot of kids have asthma, and that also kind of contributes to their anxiety, which I'm hoping we can mention towards the end of this conversation. So, I mean, let's start with why is adequate sleep important for anybody? Not even talk of teens, but to anybody at all, why is sleep an issue?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of research that has been done. The sleep field is a relatively young field. It's interesting. This is something that, you know, just like we breathe, just like we eat, sleep is that fundamental. Yet, we don't fully understand the function of sleep, believe it or not. There are several proposed theories around benefits of sleep, which include things like, you know, energy restoration and rejuvenation, learning and memory consolidation, and things like that. And you know, there have been a lot of studies that have been done, but the direct, you know, actual function is not completely understood. So sleep is a fundamental biological need. So every living creature, right? Even from the fruit fly, from the smallest organisms to like mammals, of course, to humans, will require sleep to function, to grow, for our brains to be able to process, for us to be able to, our metabolic systems to be able to work and things like that. So it's just so fundamental. It's like water. And so really affecting every area of our lives.
Do you find that people talk about sleep and mention insomnia? So I'm wondering, is it the same thing? Is it the same thing to have a sleep difficulty as well as having insomnia, or is it a spectrum?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way we look at sleep, there are different categories. A lot of what you hear is along the lines of, okay, sleep deprivation, people are not sleeping enough. So that's just one column. So really, we're looking at sleep in terms of the quantity, and that quantity varies by age. So you have newborns and children sleeping anywhere from newborns from 14 to 17 hours, really showing you how important sleep is, again, for development, for growth and learning. and children needing more, and then over time in adults or in teenagers, 8 to 10 hours, in adults about 7 to 9. So that's quantity. But beyond quantity, there are times you and I may have experienced, you may have experienced it, where you get that maybe 8 hours of sleep and you wake up in the morning and you're like, ugh, I still feel exhausted. I still feel somehow. And sometimes it may have to do with the quality. So that's another part of sleep that can be impacted. And when we talk about the quality of sleep, there are many things that could go wrong or many choices or habits that can impact our sleep quality. So we look at things that are internal. So things like if you have a lot of, if you have a medical problem, for instance, if you have what you call sleep apnea, there's a condition called restless leg syndrome, or if you have, you know, factors like anxiety, depression, right? Those are sort of things that are internal that can impact your sleep quality because you're waking up a lot. And so you're not able to get that rest. Or another thing that can affect your sleep quality are things that we do, our habits, right? Our devices, the caffeine, alcohol, food intake, all those, not enough exercise, all those things can affect the quality of sleep we get. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the third category when I think about sleep is the timing of sleep. So we all have this internal clock or circadian rhythms, which really helps to determine when we sleep, when we're sleepy, mm-hmm. and when we are awake. So if your circadian rhythm is off from when your sleep opportunity comes, then you might find yourself in bed, unable to sleep. Right. So we see that a lot in our teenagers, right? They have that physiologic shift. And so it's not a fault of themselves when you send them to bed at 8 p.m. No matter how hard they try, they're not going to be able to sleep because their bodies have shifted. Their circadian rhythm is shifted. And so their bodies are just not able to sleep until later. So those are kind of the broad categories. Now, things like and sleeping difficulties is sort of like a big umbrella term that can affect the quality, the quantity, as well as the timing of sleep. Mm-hmm. And then insomnia is sort of one of the many sleep issues that we can have.
Okay. I'm just wondering, in your practice, how many of the kids you see have a mental health diagnosis? And I'm talking from neurodevelopmental in the younger kids, to older teens also who may be on the spectrum or who have ADHD, to those with depression or anxiety. How often do those get referred to you?
Very, very often. In fact, one of my colleagues were actually looked at this, where they looked at children that had neurodevelopmental conditions and see how many of the children we see in our sleep center actually have sleep problems. And it was in the upwards of close to 70%. And this is similar to what's been published in the literature. So it's actually very prevalent. And sometimes some people even have it, find it hard. And I'm not the expert on this. You are. But it's almost like part of the defining features of some mental health problems, right? Depression or neurodevelopmental conditions like ADHD. Sleep tends to find its way as one of the features that you'll see. So, of course, most of the kids that I see are referred. So these are children that, you know, the families have tried everything. Their pediatricians have tried everything. And then, you know, the last ditch effort. So I definitely see more of the worst case scenario in that sense. But it is absolutely a big problem.
Right. And I always kind of wonder what came first, the chicken or the egg? Because, okay, for those with neurodevelopmental disorders, we think, okay, it's because of a structural problem, it's kind of innate, and they may have sleep difficulties. But for the teens with depression or anxiety, you wonder, did the sleep difficulty or the sleep deprivation kind of contribute to the mood disorder or the anxiety disorder, or is it the other way around? I don't know. What do you think of that question?
That's the big debate. We still don't know. It's a bi-directional relationship. So what came first? They both impact the quality of sleep. So anxiety and depression can impact your ability to sleep well. But that in and of itself also lowers the threshold for those anxious symptoms and things like that. So yes, it's a hard one. And I would say, especially with depression, they're really, I think, about three broad categories of sleep problems we see in that group of children. Most people think of insomnia, but there's also something called hypersomnia, where children or adults are sleeping too much, and it's almost like an exit strategy, right? Mm-hmm. So you might see hypersomnia where they are sleeping a lot. And then the third one for some are things like, you know, sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, and things like that. Those are not as common. Insomnia is the most common, but hypersomnia, you can actually have a child who's depressed, who is sleeping too much. But what caused what, we still don't understand. We still don't fully get it, because they both are so, you know, intertwined that it's hard to piece them out.
Another one that I commonly see is like a reversal of the sleep cycle. So they're sleeping during the day and then they're up all night. And I'm just wondering, I mean, is that a behavioral thing, or is there any science behind why they can't sleep at nighttime?
Yeah. It's a combination, especially depending on when this starts. So for those who are, you know, for during puberty is when we really start to see that shift, where children, adolescents are shifted about 2 hours. And so around then, you know, if they continue, if you don't address that, that shift can just continue such that, you know, initially they're falling asleep at 11 p.m., 12 midnight. And then over time, again, mainly either because of a combination of, you know, electronics, exposure to light, or their mood or fear of sleeping. Some of them, it's really that anxiety of, I've had people say they're scared of falling asleep because they feel like something bad will happen. So they feel safer sleeping during the day when everybody else is awake and there are people around to watch and make sure they're safe. But then you can still have that shift to the point where children are completely reversed, especially if they keep exposing themselves to technology and really doing things that are more wake promoting. You can get that shift.
So you mentioned this shift, this 2 hour shift that happens in adolescence. Does that even shift further in adulthood? Do you find that our time?
No, it doesn't just keep shifting. Otherwise, okay. we'll all be up all night. No. Usually around adolescence, then young adulthood, there tends to be a shift back where, you know, you're now able to sleep. So it's just during that period with the hormonal changes that happens. But most of the time, you then get a reversal to normal. And then in late adulthood, people actually now have what you call an advanced phase where you're not able to keep your eyes open by 8 p.m. It's really, really interesting. So that tends to be what happens.
So you mentioned a couple of the factors that contribute to poor sleep in teens. You mentioned screen time, but I wanted you to go into further detail about that, as well as other things that you've noticed affect sleep in teens in the general population, not even those with a mental health diagnosis now.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of things. You know, one is that big physiologic shift, which honestly, if we didn't have, you know, when you allow them to sleep aligned to their bodies, they don't have any problem. So if you let your teen go to sleep at midnight and they didn't have to go to school at ungodly hours, 6 a.m., 5 a.m., whatever, they actually can sleep through the night and wake up at about 10 a.m. or so, and everything will be fine. But society is not going to let us do that, right? So, you know, and early school start times is not going to let us do that. So that's one issue, the fact that they have this circadian shift, but it's right. Not supported by enough sleep at the end of the night. They have to wake up early. So pressure from society, like early school start times, which is something that I always tell every parent, if you have your child in middle or high school or even elementary school, you can start to advocate to your school district to try to make that change. It's completely wrong. It's against their physiology, and we're depriving them of REM sleep, which is a very valuable sleep that's important for their learning, their mood, and their cognition. So I'll get off my soapbox. But
it's good to know. It's good to know this.
Yes. So that's one other thing, you know, the early school start time. But on top of that, other societal pressures, right? Homework.
Can I just put in here, how early is this school time you're talking about?
So anywhere, some schools are starting at 7:15.
Wow, that is early.
Yes, it's early, 7:15, 7:30. But that means they have to catch the bus almost sometimes an hour before. So by 6 a.m., while it's extremely dark outside, which means they have to be they have to have been awake by like 5:30 in some school districts. Some of them it's more like 7:30, 7:45. But unless you're a parent that's going to drop your child, most children are going by the bus. So they're out in the dark when their bodies are supposed to be sleeping. So it's really, we're really doing a great disservice to our youth. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the early school start time, again, it's those obligations. So work, sometimes they have work after school. Sometimes they have after school activities, right? Volunteers or clubs. Sometimes it's sports. Sometimes it's the homework. It's volumes and volumes of homework that's due sometimes at midnight. So, you know, so it's a lot of all those things. So those are external factors as well, or external and environmental factors. Then another thing that also contributes to is the habits, right? It's the habits and the choices. Now, our teens feel very, you know, the network and community is such a big part of their lives and peer pressure. And so that need to be constantly plugged in, that need to know what's going on with friends. So we're talking social media, we're talking hanging out on Snapchat, we're talking, you know, WhatsApp, or I don't know, that I don't think they do WhatsApp, but, you know, whatever it is. They're constantly on. They're on. And there are two reasons why that the devices and technology can impact sleep. It's been such a blessing because especially for children that have mood disorders, it's so important for them to be connected, right? It's so important for them to have community, friends they can talk to, friends to lift them up and things. But the problem too is that they are using the devices and it's preventing them from being able to sleep on time because those devices have this blue wavelength light that then suppresses melatonin production. So it makes it hard for them to fall asleep. Our bodies produce melatonin, which is your sleep hormone, which helps you to fall asleep. So because they're exposed to light and that blue light that comes from phones and video games and computers, it suppresses that the body's natural melatonin. So it further delays their sleep time even more. And then on top of that, the excitement you're getting from hearing from your friend liking the video you just posted, or somebody just said something that just made you so upset, or even the notifications, even if you put your phone down, you know, those things can disrupt their sleep significantly. And then, of course, things like caffeine, right? A lot of our teens, because they're so sleep deprived, guess how they combat it? They drink caffeine. They drink soda.
Energy drinks,
you know, things like that. Coffee, they love Starbucks, right? It's like that kind of thing. So combining all those things, then they have issues with their sleep. And then finally, there's the sort of almost like the inability for them to sleep, which is the insomnia we're talking about. And a lot of that for teenagers, they have a type of insomnia called psychophysiologic insomnia, and it's just really that mind racing they get once they're about to sleep. And it's because they've now had this conditioned response whereby once they're about to set their head on the pillow to go to sleep, their mind just takes over. It's racing, they feel anxious, they feel stressed, and we see that a lot in children with mental health problems as well. Of course, things like medical sleep disorders as well can affect your sleep, but which is a whole different on its own.
Right. Just to our audience, remember you can type in your comments. We'll take questions at the end. If you're on Facebook or on YouTube, just type in your questions and we'll try and address them. So thank you for that, Dr. Funke Afolabi Brown. So you've mentioned, caffeine, you've mentioned screen time, you mentioned the constant notifications, the early start to their day. And also in those with a mental health diagnosis, the anxiety, the racing minds. For those with ADHD or who may be on the spectrum, what kind of things do you think affect their sleep?
So for those, for the teens as well, it's similar. It's actually been studied. It's not fully understood as well, but you know, we talked about that hormone melatonin, which essentially helps us to fall asleep at night and things like that. For children with autism, ADHD, and other developmental problems, studies have shown that the melatonin production is abnormal. So abnormal, like, is it low? Is it dysregulated? That's not 100% clear. And so that in and of itself makes it hard for them to sleep. So sometimes I do have children that are have ADHD, they're doing everything right. They're eliminating caffeine, they're eliminating devices, and they just cannot fall asleep. And in those situations, sometimes we need to help them with some medications or use melatonin and things like that. Another thing that we see frequently, in addition to just, you know, the lights, the caffeine, the habits, and just their inability to sleep because they're more at risk for insomnia. Another thing we see a lot in them, interestingly enough, is a condition called restless leg syndrome, which is that discomfort. A lot of pregnant women may have experienced it during pregnancy, but children have it quite frequently. And it's that restlessness or discomfort in their lower extremities, in their legs, before they go to sleep. And it's hard. Sometimes it's hard for them to describe it. They just feel uncomfortable. They can't settle down. That's one of the things parents say. They just cannot settle down. And usually, you know, when you're able to ask them the right questions, you discover, oh, wow, you know, I have this creepy, crawly feeling in my legs. It's like my legs feel like they have a life of their own and things like that. And we can do a blood test to check their iron level. Sometimes that tends to be low and we need to replace it. Sometimes we need to put them on medicine for it, and that's helpful as well. So those are just a few of it. And then a lot of children that have neurodevelopmental problems like autism, ADHD, are also at a very high risk for anxiety, for depression, for other problems. And so that, again, now becomes this whole, you know, spiral.
So I wanted you to just kind of provide us general strategies that you think would help. I mean, before we go to medication, just general strategies for the general population, even kids that don't even have a mental health disorder. There are parents who may be listening who are saying my teen won't sleep at nighttime. What would help?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say making this something that we talk about way before sleep is very helpful, so that children don't feel threatened. Trying to get them to understand, you know, we've talked a lot about how beneficial sleep is, what are the consequences. To them, it's like, oh, please, you know, because they can't see it, right? So making it something that they can connect with in your daily conversations with them. You know, I've heard my son once say, oh, gosh, I can't wait for Saturday. Why? Because he can sleep in. Oh, really? So what's been going on during the week? So then it gives us opportunity to say, okay, so it seems like you're not getting enough sleep during the week. Why do we have to wait till the weekend to get enough sleep? How about we try to get you to bed maybe 15 minutes early? And so having those conversations, I think getting them on the same page is so important, because no matter how much you preach to them, that's all they're hearing, right? So they don't see it the way you see it. So that's something that you should always try to work on. And then the other piece, I think, are I have a framework that I use, which really helps walk through some evidence-based ways to get your family to have restful sleep. So one of the key things is consistency, especially with our teenagers. I think it's really important, and also for us as adults and for our younger children too, having a consistent sleep time, a consistent wake time. And that should probably not move too much, even on the weekends, maybe by 2 hours at most. Mm-hmm. So the reason why is, again, we have this circadian rhythm or interlock clock that tightly regulates all our functions. And if it's set to, if it knows that it's your body wakes up at a certain time in the morning, then all the other things that need to go on through the day are influenced by that. On the weekends, I know a lot of people try to sleep in. And while it's just such a pleasant experience most of the time, you want to avoid sleeping in for too long. So maybe by 2 hours max from your regular, especially for our teenagers. And then the other thing I always recommend is having a routine. I think that's really important, especially for either children that have anxiety, depression, or ADHD, because then there's something they're looking forward to. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They can anticipate it. It's not like, oh, drop your phone and go to bed. No, they have a routine. They have this 2 or 3 relaxing activities just heading in the direction of the bedroom. So whether it's taking a bath, reading a book together, or, you know, writing, coloring, something really relaxing, meditation, things like that, that heads in the direction of the bedroom. And then another thing is making sure that the environment is cool. It's dark and it's noise free. The reason why is, again, that light affects our melatonin production. Noise and temperature also can disrupt our sleep. Then I always encourage us to assign the bed for sleep and sleep only in bed. So the bed should not become your movie theater. It should not become your dining room. It should not become your video game lounge, because our brains make associations. So when you get into bed to sleep, then your brain is like, is it time for sleep or is it time to play another video game? So really assigning your bed for sleep. Mm-hmm. And then one of the things I also encourage is the technology. I mean, that's a whole talk for So find a way to try to minimize technology about 30 to 60 minutes before bedtime. And so that's somewhere you would have to have those conversations. And really, you know, it may mean that everyone charges their phones outside of the bedroom, because if it's in the room, then the likelihood and the temptation to pick it up and quickly respond to a text is much higher. So those are just a few of the tips that I usually would recommend as a great place to start to sleep better.
What of gaming, and particularly boys, they're on their Xboxes, does that affect their sleep?
Yes. Again, that falls under that tackle technology umbrella. So the video, it's the source of the light. Mm-hmm. I mean, the phones are, because it's so close, right? So that tends to be one that gets a lot of the bad rap. But the TV, video games, laptops, computers, anything with those screens really releases the blue wavelength light. And the gaming is a huge one, especially at bedtime, because, you know, there's the competition, there's the feeling of arousal and feeling so energetic about the game you're playing, that in and of itself makes it hard for your mind to wind down before bed. So while I think, you know, it helps their dexterity. I've had some teens argue with me that it's great for their hand-eye coordination. you know,
that's good.
It's fine. You can play the video games. Just make sure that you're setting the right boundaries, you get your homework done, and that you're not doing it too close to bedtime.
Okay. I wanted to ask about, you know, at what point do they need to go and see a sleep specialist? I know sleep physicians are very thin on the ground, particularly those that deal with pediatrics. But at what point do you need to say, okay, this isn't working, I need to get help?
Yes. So I think when you've tried those, you know, like those tips I just provided, that's a place to start. Really understanding where the problem is coming from. So is your child getting enough sleep, but they're still waking up tired? They're still waking up feeling very sleepy? Are they having difficulty sleeping and you've eliminated all those things? So it's not like they're on their phone or things like that. Then I think those are indications that you may need additional help. Of course, if your child has any mental health concern at all, I think that's a red flag and you definitely want to make sure that they seek help. Also, things like snoring, if there are specific symptoms like that. Snoring is a sound that your throat is making because your airway is getting narrow. And it can be a sign that you have a condition called sleep apnea, which is a very serious condition, but it's very treatable. So if you have that, or if you have any discomfort before during sleep, those are all reasons when you want to definitely see a sleep physician.
Okay. Do you find that kids who have asthma, they tend to be more anxious and have more sleep difficulties because of the anxiety, but of the asthma? I'm just wondering.
It's a very interesting relationship. Some children with anxiety tend to have panic attacks that looks like asthma. Mm-hmm. And at times, especially in teenage girls, actually, it's very common to see. Sometimes it's a sign of a condition called vocal cord dysfunction. And it's a big, big confusing entity because they may be wheezing. You may hear them wheezing. They can't seem to breathe. Everybody's freaking out. And because everybody's freaking out, they're now panicking. And then, you know, they're panicking more and then they're not breathing. But what happens with vocal cord dysfunction is your vocal cords, which is right up here, separate from your lungs, that's way down. Your vocal cord moves when you talk, right? And so if you're having a panic attack, sometimes it just stays closed instead of opening and closing. And so one of the things they complain of is that they can't get air in, but the way they'll describe it is, I can't breathe. And sometimes they may have a history of asthma. And so usually it's hard. And even physicians in the ER at times have that confused, and they're pumping them up with albuterol and steroids. But sometimes all they need to do is slow down their breathing so that their vocal cords can give way. So that's one thing that I see that you know, panic attack can mimic. Mm-hmm. But that being said, asthma tends to be worse at night. So you may see a patient, you may see a teen have more coughing, more wheezing at nighttime, especially if it's something that wakes them up out of sleep.
Right.
And so that's something also that we see. Things that can trigger asthma, yes, are things like a panic attack can also trigger asthma. Mm-hmm. Stress, of course, any type of illness, if you have a cold, or if you have or exercise, environmental mm-hmm. changes. So if your room is dusty or things like that, that can also make you start coughing a lot at night, and can cause an asthma attack.
Wow, there's so much to think about there. So I know that you do have you do have a couple of programs that you run for sleeping teens. So tell us about your program, your sleeping teens course, and what services that you offer.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a sleep in teens course. And remember what I mentioned, talking to them from till you're blue in the face sometimes just doesn't seem to do it. You know, sleep is important. You've seen what sleep deprivation has, you know, what the impact, you can see it right away in them. But they just don't, they're not on the same page. So with the sleep in teens course, what I created is, you know, it's tailored for your teenagers. And so this is a self-paced course that they can participate in. And they're short videos because we all know their attention span is not necessarily the longest, right? And we don't want it to seem like work for them. I want it to be something they enjoy, because they're understanding why sleep is important. They're understanding how they can take on autonomy for their own sleep. And they understand how to develop sleep habits that will last them not just through their teen years, but so that they can become good sleepers when they're adults. And so that's on my website. It's an 8-module course. It allows you also, there's also a sleep diary that gets in that's also included, and helps them to understand what's going on objectively, to see how their sleep is, and really watching it improve over the period of the course. The families also get access to a private Facebook group as well. And so I think there's just a ton of resources and a lot they can learn from it. And really, to improve their sleep, it really starts from having that knowledge. And that's what this course is about.
Wow. That's a lot. You're offering a lot of content, you know, for the parents, for the team themselves, and support. So I'm just if you look on the screen, Dr. Falabi Brown's website is showing www.restfulsleepmd.com. Follow her on Instagram. She has YouTube videos as well, you know, so there's a lot that she's offering that would help you and your teen. So before I let you go, I'm just wondering, are there any last words, any great wisdom for sleeping teens that you can, help us with today as we wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to encourage us to just start to prioritize sleep, because sleep is a superpower. It's our hidden superpower. There's so much more we can get done. And sometimes we feel that there's not enough time to sleep. I think there's not enough time not to sleep. So once you start to prioritize sleep, you see the benefits right away. And so that's just something I want us to all take advantage of.
Fantastic. Thank you so, so much for this lovely discussion. I mean, it's been so informative. And just to say that we're going to continue our series on depression. Next week, I'm going to have a guest come talk about cognitive behavioral therapy and how it can be used in depression. So keep following us on Instagram, on YouTube, on Pinterest, on Facebook, just for information that would help you empower that youth in your life and improve their mental health. Follow Dr. Falabi Brown on Restful Sleep MD. There's a lot of content that she provides that's also useful to help yourself, your teen, your child, with prioritizing sleep and improving the quality of your life in general. I don't think we have any questions, so I'm just going to say thank you, and I hope that we see you all again soon. If you're watching the replay, please just comment and say hashtag replay, so we know that you caught this at some point. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Looking forward to having you join me on the next episode. Till then, don't forget to share this with your friends and neighbors and to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, where I am known as St. John Cap. That is St. John Cap with a double P. See you soon.